beyond evil, beyond your wildest imagination.
Folks, at the famous Polo Grounds. It's been a one-sided knockdown drag-em-out ball game right from the very first inning, with the visiting team, the Birdie Gashouse Gorillas, giving the home team, the Teetotalers, a shellacking they'll never forget. Baseball fans, oh, there goes a screaming liner into left field. The home team hasn't a chance, but they're in there punchy, nevertheless.
I'm only 93 and a half years old.
Hello and welcome to Tooncast Beyond's Animation Direction Spotlight. I am one of your hosts, TV Channel Mike, and joining me is TV's Mr. Neil.
I'm the roughest, toughest, T-Man stuffest hombre that ever crossed the Rio Grande, and I ain't no namby-pamby. I can't believe I got through that without stuttering.
Today, Junior. Oh, Lord. So this is the fourth overall, I think, for animation direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I can't count. Yay. Yes, this is the fourth episode out of 12. And today, tonight, whenever you're listening to this, we're going to be talking about the man, the myth, the legend, the guy who has a drink named after him, Mr. Friz Freleng. I always remember, I don't remember the short, but I remember seeing his name on a drink sign in one of the cartoons, and then I saw the same sign, except it was upside down
mm-hmm.
in one of them. Yeah, Friz Freleng, he, one of the founding fathers of Looney Tunes, has had some of his tunes are some of the funniest.
Yeah, he's kind of a chameleon, almost. He, whenever you think of, like, the great Looney Tunes cartoons, you always think of Clampett or Tex Avery or even Chuck Jones. But then there's this guy, and he did so much. He, first of all, he didn't particularly like Elmer Fudd, but he did create a bunch of great characters to use in place of Elmer, such as, most importantly, Yosemite
himself.
Yeah, Yosemite Sam. He also created the Tasmanian Devil. He only did one Tasmanian Devil cartoon, and then the rest of them were all Robert McKimson. But
yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah,
that he only did one.
Yeah, he did the lion's share of the Tweety Bird cartoons.
Yep.
So. Yeah, go ahead.
There's not a lot. I know this is going to be sacrilege here, but I've seen so many Sylvester and Tweety cartoons over the years. I think the only one that I still absolutely love, and I don't even think it was Friz that did it, was Birds Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what it is about. They are great. They were great when I was a kid, but I don't know. I just don't see. I know Sylvester and Tweety are classic, but, like, I prefer the ones where it's like Sylvester and Son, and it's them going up against a kangaroo, which is a giant mouse, and that kind of, like, that's the Sylvester cartoon that I like. I will take that back. There is one. Dr. Jekyll and Tweety Hyde or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah.
I love that one. But Friz, he has a... No, I mean, these guys put out... And these are... We all know these are shorts, but these guys put out a lot. You know, people say I've put out a lot of podcasts in the 6 years I've been podcasting. In the time that these guys had as directors and producers. Friz has 332 directorial credits, and he has 355 producer credits.
Right.
Just think about that. 300 and something cartoons in, you know, what, 20, 30-year span?
Right.
And that's amazing. I mean, that's an achievement in and of itself.
He and Chuck Jones really did the lion's share of the cartoons after the war, after Schlesinger left. And I think they had recommended, there was a conspiracy theory that they had recommended Robert McKimson being given a directorial role, you know, to kind of have someone that really couldn't compete with them. But, you know, McKimson did okay.
Everybody rants on Bob McKimson. He has done some of my favorite Bugs Bunny cartoons.
Well, we'll talk.
Yeah. I mean, well, no, I know. But I'm saying, like, I remember when you and I first started coming up with this whole spotlight. You're like, I don't know how long I can talk about McKimson.
Well, there is the farmhouse, the farmland characters. You know, those are okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Friz, you know, the harebrained hypnotist, the sheepish wolf. What other ones is he most famous for? Rookie Review, Notes to You. There's so many different ones that he has done. I think one of my absolute favorites, though, is. Where is it? Oh, God. So many. Oh, here we go. Hairdo. I love Hairdo. Hairdo is awesome. Because he's hunting. Elmer's hunting for. Wow. Probably the only one that. One of the only ones that Friz directed that has Elmer in it.
Mm-hmm.
Hunts for bugs with a army surplus wabbit detector. I love that one.
Is that one of the ones with Fat Elmer? Because I know he did two Fat Elmer cartoons.
No, I think that's regular Elmer.
Oh, okay.
I think. I wish iTunes would give me the dates on these other than when they actually released, but... you know, it's just one of those things where he is such an interesting guy, especially the Bugs Bunny Yosemite stuff.
Yeah, I think the one that always comes to mind for me is Nighty Night Bugs.
Yep.
Where the drawbridge keeps falling on him.
I demand you open this door right now, you ornery critter.
Close it up again.
Absolutely love that.
Yes.
I think.
You're a stupid dragon.
Yeah. You stupid idiot dragon. I'm trying to see here if. Let's see.
Or the one where he's a pirate and Bugs keeps throwing the match down in the gunpowder room.
I ain't going to get it again. But I have to say, I would be remiss without mentioning this one, because it is one of my number one favorite all-time Bugs Bunny cartoons, Baseball Bugs.
Oh, yes.
Baseball Bugs was amazing. Every joke in that In that cartoon is amazing. You know, there's a screamer going into left field and the ball starts screaming. One of the outfielders going back, I got it. Grave pops up, he got it. I love Baseball Bugs. He also did Showbiz Bugs, which is interesting. I think that's one of the ones where Lolly interviews Bugs. I forget what her... It was one of the 4A characters, because we all know that it wasn't just Mel.
Well, he had,
even though he had an exclusive
contract where he only got
right. Yeah, I mean, Mel Blanc would have been a super genius if he could sound like June Foray. You know? I mean, this is just absolutely hilarious. What other ones from Frizz do you really enjoy?
Unfortunately, I don't know as many of them by name as I do with the other directors. You know, I really do like the Tweety and Sylvester cartoons. They're kind of a little too close to Tom and Jerry, but they're still funny.
Well, there's a difference. Sylvester and Tweety talk.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, sure. Later, when Chuck went to, and we're not talking about Chuck this time around, but when he did created his own studio and did his own version of Tom and Jerry, those were more Looney Tunes. I mean, there were several times where Tom and Jerry each made noises that I think were both also provided by Mel.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Chuck is the last one in this thing. I'm looking at my iTunes thing here, and I don't know what it is with seasons 1 and 2 of Bugs Bunny on iTunes, but they're all, almost all of them except Baseball Bugs and Showbiz Bugs are Chuck. But Frizz, you know, he did some amazing work. He went to MGM in 1937.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was going to direct for MGM's Cartoon Studio, headed by Fred Quimby. He found he would be working on The Captain and the Kids, adapted from the popular comic strip, The Katzenjammer Kids. The series failed to achieve much success, much as Freeling had predicted. Though skillfully animated, the characters could not compete in the funny animals that prevailed in the time. And then he went back to Schlesinger. Is this where you ought... Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You ought to be in pictures.
Right.
Anybody who's anybody who grew up on Looney Tunes or ever saw a Bugs Bunny or Porky Pig or Daffy Duck cartoon, you ought to watch this one because, oh my God, this is hilarious. I love You Ought to Be in Pictures. One of the very rare times that there was live action in the Looney Tunes universe.
Right, and it was quite a feat to do that back then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was way before Roger Rabbit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Wait a second. I thought Mike Maltese wrote this one.
I don't know.
It says Jack Miller. I don't know. Could be a wiki flub, You Ought to Be in Pictures actually has Mike Maltese in it.
Right, he was the security guard, right?
Security guard, yep. But it's not his voice. That's Mel.
Of course.
Oh man. So Frizz, you know, as you said, kind of started the whole thing with Bugs and Yosemite Sam. And I don't understand Sam's obsession with hating rabbits. I mean, I know it's just in human nature to hate rabbits, but, like, I don't get why he hates him.
I think it's just because Sam is an outlaw and Bugs just routinely made a fool of him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that could be it.
Because every cartoon he's in, he just kind of like walks into a bar or something and there's Bugs. And then Bugs just proceeds to humiliate him from the beginning.
Yeah. Oh, wow. He did Homeless Homer, 1929.
Mm.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. Says here he also worked at Disney. For a very brief time.
Yeah, because he's credited with
an Oswald.
He's also uncredited with a Bosco cartoon.
Yeah. I wouldn't want my name on that either.
You know. Good old Bosco. Pigs is Pigs, 1937. The Fellow with the Fiddle. You know, I mean, he's done so many cool things. I still got to go back to Baseball Bugs, though. That's probably my favorite Freeling tune. And you're right, he did obviously most of the war stuff, and which is fine. You know, you've got Big House Bunny, let's see, Stooge for a Mouse, Canary Row, Bunker Hill Bunny. I think I remember Bunker Hill Bunny. Is that the one where Bugs joins the military?
I think so.
Fight it out in the little known American Revolutionary War, Battle of Bagel Heights. what always kind of confused me was, because I had always heard his name as Friz Freleng, when I start seeing the cartoons showed as Director I. Freleng, because that's his,
yeah,
Isidore's his real name.
Yeah, that's,
I wonder,
that's Schlesinger again, requiring that he uses his real name.
Yep. Oh, 14 Karat Rabbit. Love that one.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one where he and... yeah, that's the one where he and Sam go gold hunting. And because Bugs goes crazy every time he's near gold, and once Sam finds out about this, and he tries to exploit it, and Bugs leads him into the worst trap you could ever be in if you're a gold hunter. You never want to dig at Fort Knox.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
man, that's so hilarious. Friz didn't just do, you know, like I said, he was at MGM, but he didn't just do Bugs Bunny and Looney Tunes stuff. He also did a lot of the Pink Panther stuff later.
Yeah, he and DePatty opened up their own studio.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, you know, I love a lot of the old Pink Panther stuff. I really do.
Yeah.
What?
I was just reading the article here. Yeah, I was just thinking that we have a separate spotlight for David H. DePatie, but I have a feeling that, like, we're going to say everything that needs to be said about him right here. Because,
yeah, pretty much.
Because these two basically worked in tandem until Marvel bought the studio and then proceeded to create Transformers and G.I. Joe.
Wait, Marvel bought DePatie Studios? Seriously?
Yep. That's...
And they turned it into Sunbow?
They didn't turn it into Sunbow. Sunbow was always a separate entity, but
it became
Marvel Productions, and DePatie stayed on for a little while, and while Friz Freleng retired, so
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's why some of the later Pink Panther cartoons are actually credited as being done by Marvel Studios, and if you look in the credits, some of them even have Nelson Shin as an animator. So yeah. So there's a direct link from the Looney Tunes right to the 80s, our childhood.
Well, you know, Sludge did have that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I bet Nelson Shin boarded that segment when Devastator crushes Sludge and he has the Looney Tunes eye pop out moment.
Probably not. I think that was... I think
no,
that the...
I know.
Yeah, that's just been like... Some animator having fun.
Yep. He's got, you know, Schlesinger had a hands-off attitude towards his animators, which allowed Freleng and his fellow directors almost complete creative control and room to experiment with cartoon comedy styles, which allowed the studio to keep pace with the Disney Studios' technical superiority. Freleng's style quickly matured, and he became a master of comic timing, often working alongside layout artist Howley Pratt. He also introduced or redesigned a number of famous Warner Brothers characters, including Yosemite Sam, Sylvester and Tweety, as we've already said, and Speedy Gonzales. There's a character that I don't see a lot of cartoons for on Boomerang right now.
Yeah, because he's kind of politically incorrect. Kind of the same thing with the Frito Bandito, who so I think Freeling also designed, if I'm not mistaken. Frito Bandito was the spokesperson or the spokescartoon for the Frito chips, and after a while, some parents groups got kind of upset, and even though I think both Frito Bandito and Speedy Gonzales were kind of popular in the Hispanic community, and Speedy Gonzales is still popular.
He is. He is. Always love those Speedy cartoons.
Yeah.
And then they had to introduce Slowpoke. That was hilarious.
Slowpoke Rodriguez. He has a gun.
Now, Freeling, in his later career before he passed away, he was the executive producer on three 80s Looney Tunes compilation features.
Yeah.
Which linked together several of the classic shorts with new animated sequences. The ones he produced were the Looney Looney Bugs Bunny movie, or Looney 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 Bugs Bunny movie in 81, Bugs Bunny third movie, 1001 Rabbit Tales in 82, and Daffy Duck's Fantastic Island.
Now, these used to drive me nuts, not because I didn't enjoy watching them, but because I instantly knew that they were, like, made up of, like, pre-existing cartoons. And everyone else I knew, like, didn't see that for some reason. I'm like, that's an old cartoon. And they're like, what? Some of the kids I knew when I was young were really stupid or didn't watch cartoons, apparently. Because it's like I was already like studying cartoons, and like I guess no one really, I hate to say this, but I guess like kids weren't watching them or something.
I don't know. What's so interesting to me is to see how they did the cutarounds, because I've seen Transylvania 6 5000 outside of 1001, not 1001 Rabbit Tales, Quackbusters. I've seen it outside of Quackbusters. It's interesting to see what the original cartoon was compared to what they put in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
I could never tell the new animation, like, what they put in.
I could, just because the color composition would be off, and mm-hmm. the voices were, I mean, the because you have an older Mel Blanc, and yeah. especially like with characters like Bugs and Daffy, where in the old cartoons they would speed them up, and mm-hmm. in the compilation movies they wouldn't. So Daffy's voice would be noticeably lower than it would be in the old cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another thing. I'm just like, what the hell is going on here? Why are the voices so different? I mean, I know he's older, but that shouldn't matter that much. And yeah, it was that they were speeding him up in the old cartoons.
Yeah. Interesting. I wonder how that went, though. Like, what was the process for that? Like, did they just fast forward the tape, or?
Well, yeah, it was just, they would just play the tape back at a different speed. I mean, that was pretty common. Yeah. And they did that with a lot of characters. Just, you know, to hide the voices. You know, if you only have, like, five guys on the staff, you would, there are a lot of different things you could do to mask the voice.
Right.
Or like in Warner Brothers' case, where you only have one guy, plus like maybe, you know, on an off day, you might have like him co-starring with Dawes Butler, or I don't know who else, June Foray.
Right, yeah. I think the thing that I hear most said about Friz Freleng is how he always had that very short temper, hence why Yosemite Sam came to light. I mean, that's always, I've always heard that. I mean, which I don't understand why the guy had such a short temper. I mean, if he was left to do whatever he wanted to do at, you know, at Looney Tunes, and Leon didn't bother him or his animators, they should have gotten along perfectly. I don't know, maybe his attention to detail or something, maybe that's what it was, but
at least he had enough of a sense of humor about himself that he would parody himself.
Yeah. So awesome. What else do you want to say about Frizz?
Well, we only briefly mentioned the Pink Panther cartoons. The Pink mm-hmm. Panther was actually just going, it was just going to be a movie done by, what was it? It was, MGM, I think. And they were going to hire the animation team to do an intro cartoon. And they did, I think they did the intro cartoon on every single movie except for the two remakes, obviously, because, you know, both guys are dead now. Yeah, they came up with the Pink Panther character, and then they co-owned the character with the movie studio, and then they added a bunch of their own cartoon characters to kind of flesh it out, like the Inspector, which was kind of loosely based on the Inspector Clouseau character, and there were other cartoons that were, I guess, produced apart from Pink Panther, but you always see them kind of linked
lumped
any,
in.
Yeah, lumped in, like the Ant and the Aardvark, and
I love the Ant and the Aardvark.
Hoot Kloot and Roland and Ratfink.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I absolutely love the Ant and the Aardvark. Those are some of the funniest ones. And then you've got the Pink Panther cartoons that it's... Well, most of the Pink Panther cartoons, it's him versus some old white cartoon character.
Yeah, and not like white as an ethnic. I mean, like actually.
No,
he is totally white.
Color is white. Yeah, I think the one I remember the most off the top of my head is the one where they're doing. The guy is trying to plant flowers, and he's planting yellow flowers, and the Pink Panther sees this and goes behind him and plants pink ones,
mm-hmm.
and he keeps getting frustrated and more frustrated as it goes along. Frizz and the Pink Panther, you know, I think they started some sort of new Pink Panther thing now. Like, I know there's the two remakes with Steve Martin for the live-action films, but something like Pink Panther and His Pals or something or other. I don't know if that's just an old repackaging or...
I know that they did a couple revivals in recent years. And it's kind of like the Screwball Squirrel revival where it's like you really don't want to watch it. Then there's Pink Panther and Son, which is a mid-80s revival of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, from what I remember, it was okay. But it was like... It was basically like, it was almost Muppet Babies-ish. If I don't know if you kind of get what I'm going.
But no, I know like, where you're going.
Because like all the characters talk and, you know, it's just the Pink Panther. He would kind of come in like for like a cameo for, you know, whatever. It wasn't really a Pink Panther cartoon per se. It was like something completely different, but it was animated all right. For the 80s, that is.
Yeah, no, the one I'm talking about lasted from March 7th to August 23rd, 2010, and is currently airing on Boomerang. These had the voices of Kel Mitchell, oh my god, Keenan and Kel, Eddie Garvar, and Alex Nussenbaum. I'm trying to see, executive producer David Corbett. Basically, seven-minute segments, 21-minute episodes. It was done by Rubicon Studios and MGM Television.
Mm.
So that was about 4 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And the funny thing is, I'm just noticing this now because they're showing it on Boomerang, Cartoon Network's retro show channel, whatever. And I thought it was something like new, like to this year. It's not, apparently. But no, Frizz, he led an amazing life. He had an amazing career. He's one of the most loved out of the Looney Tunes directors.
Oh, yeah.
I do know that, what is it, two or three shorts Jones dedicated to Frizz's memory. I read that somewhere recently where Chuck Jones had dedicated a couple of shorts to him. Mm. But yeah, I mean, Frizz Freleng was one ornery sumbitch, and he was awesome.
And unlike Bob Clampett, he stayed working pretty much up until he retired.
Mm-hmm. Yep, pretty
much. So he was never really out of the spotlight. Well, kind of, because, you know, in the, like I said on another episode, you know, during the 80s, their names were kind of not really well known. Like people like would, I don't know. It was some weird thing about the 80s is that like the whole dedication to the directors is just kind of like de-emphasized. Like you never really heard about like who Chuck Jones was during that era. So the only, mm-hmm. the only names you really knew were Hanna-Barbera. Because they put their names on the studio.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, we'll be getting to them, but it's one of those things where half of the Hanna-Barbera Tom and Jerry cartoons, it says at the very end of it, produced by Fred Quimby. Mm-hmm. So I always thought, as a kid, I always thought, oh, well, that's the guy that's in charge. Because that's the last thing you see on a credit roll is the, you know, the last person, you know, director, whatever, but he was always credited as producer because obviously Hanna and Barbera directed the stuff. If you guys want to, so since Neil brought up the fact that we do have a separate episode planned for DePatty, but since we've pretty much talked about him this episode, if you guys want to hear me curse for 30 minutes, I guess we could throw in Deutsch.
Or do we have one for Walter Lance? Because we might have.
No.
Well, no, we might want to do him. Place.
Okay, that's fine with me.
He's got an interesting career.
That's fine with me. That'll work. All right, what do you got going on over at the Superhero Sexy Pants comic?
That is still on hiatus, but I'm very close to getting new pages done. It's just, I had a computer meltdown a couple of weeks ago, and I had a couple commissions that I needed to do, and that's been taking up my time. So yeah, that's going to be coming back fairly shortly. Plus, I have a holiday special coming up for the end of the year, and thankfully, I'm not doing all the pages for that. So, so I've been given a very nice and very nice reprieve from having to do all the pages.
That's cool. That's cool. What do you guys got coming up over at AA?
Well, we keep doing episodes, and we keep skipping the Sailor Moon app, which we have done. It's just that like something else will come up and we put that out. So I think the Sailor Moon episode is going to be coming out fairly shortly.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the new series, not the original, because I think we already did an original Sailor Moon episode.
Yep.
So yeah, we spoiler alert, we weren't very impressed with the new Sailor Moon.
Oh, man. All right. So next week, next time we come around, we're going to be talking about the man, the myth, the Foghorn Leghorn with Mr. Bob McKimson.
Oh, yeah.
That dog, I keep throwing him. You keep missing him. Are you listening to me, dog?
I found a YouTube clip that was like the best of Foghorn Leghorn. I'm like, perfect. I can pull all I can pull all the audio right off of that.
Awesome. All right, we will catch you next time.
You're out.
I'm out.
That's what the man said. You heard what he said. He said that. You heard.
That's what the man said. He said that. That's what he said. He really said that. That's what he said.
Now you forced me to use the act I've held back for a special occasion. Just try and top this one. I now present an act that no other performer has ever dared to execute. In fairness, I must warn those with weak constitutions to leave the theater for this performance. Lights? Thank you. Some appropriate music, maestro? Thank you. First, I drink a generous portion of gasoline. Then, some nitroglycerine. A goodly amount of gunpowder. from uranium-238. Shake well. Strike an ordinary match. Girls, you'd better hold on to your boyfriends. Swallow the match. So. That's terrific, Daffy. They loved it. They want more. I know, but I can only do it once.